Hello, and thanks for joining me for another edition of Face the Facts. I'm your host, April Moss. Today, we're going to be focusing on Michigan, and I'm joined by Patrick Kolbeck. He's a former state senator and currently is working as an election integrity activist. He's got an incredible website called letsfixstuff.org, and we're going to get into all the details surrounding Michigan and Governor Gretchen Whitmer. But first, a word from our sponsors. This episode of Face the Facts is brought to you today by Holy Hydrogen. Head over to holyhydrogen.com, use promo April at the checkout, and you'll be able to heal your body from the inside out with molecular hydrogen for you and your entire family. That's holyhydrogen.com and use promo April at the checkout. And now let's get right into today's discussion with Patrick Kolbeck. Patrick, thanks so much for joining us today on Face the Facts.
Great to be with you again, April.
Great to see you. And thank you so much for all you're doing. I mean, really, your website is incredible. Letsfixstuff.org has so many resources for anyone who's questioning what's going on right now. But one of the biggest stories that really needs to be told more is what's happening in Michigan regarding CONEC, which is where really it was the headquarters of CONEC right there in, East Lansing area?
Yep, Okemos, yep.
Yep. And Gretchen Whitmer giving a grant of $306,000 just last year in 2021 to CONEC. Tell us a little bit about this, because it's really hard to find evidence on Whitmer's website about any partnership at all with CONEC. But thank goodness you were able to take some screenshots so people can see evidence for themselves.
Yeah, the key point to remind everybody about regarding CONEC is that they alleged to have shared personally identifiable information on 1.8 million poll workers with the Chinese Communist Party in China. This information is now hosted on servers in China. Essentially, what CONEC was using, what it appears they were using their Polchi software to act as an intel siphon to provide information on U.S. elections to the Chinese intelligence community. So when we talk about Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer funding CONEC to the tune of $306,000 from our Michigan Strategic Fund, essentially what we see here is that she funded a Chinese intelligence operation with Michigan taxpayer dollars. And that should be front page news everywhere. And the fact that it's not being talked about anywhere is kind of frustrating for me personally, because that is that's a serious concern. And like you alluded to, it's very difficult to find this information on her website anymore. But thankfully, I do have this control S twitch nowadays, because once I see something, I know it's probably going to be deleted if it's important at all. So I make sure that we capture that information, not just me, but meddling kids like ConocoPhillips the Great and a lot of folks all across the country are performing citizen investigation across the board, and they're capturing this information before it can be deleted from the internet.
And thank God for that. And wow, have we learned how much citizen journalism has been so important and really the backbone of truth today, as mainstream media continues to cover up the truth regarding the 2020 election. Patrick, you've
One more key point on that. Sorry, April. By the way, if there's no problem with the donation of these funds, the granting of $306,000 taxpayer dollars to this company, why cover it up? Why delete it? I mean, one of these stories that she covered up was highlighting CONEC as a success story for these investments and something that she was very proud about at the time. Why is she covering up now if there's no issue?
I believe she even said, I remember seeing a video where she was very proud that they had even created 51 jobs.
Yeah. So here's the way government works. They spent $306,000 to get a $293,000 benefit. So not exactly the return on investment you get in the private sector.
Well, and, you know, I wanted to do my due diligence. I did put in a request, an email to Governor Whitmer's office to ask for her comment. Does she still back those positive comments for CONEC, even though we know now that Eugene Yu has been arrested and that, you know, this is what's concerning is that CONEC wasn't just used in I mean, the city of Detroit had a contract with Konak, but also they also were the same software that the military uses. Yeah. So that means Konak was in all 50 states. So this isn't just a Michigan issue, although it is troublesome that all of a sudden Whitmer doesn't want anyone to know that she used taxpayer dollars to fund this software in the state. But tell me
not just all 50 states with the Uocava contract that they had. Now they are tied into systems that likely connect in with sensitive military systems. So this isn't just a HR program at that point. This is another entry point into compromising our military and Defense Department.
Tell me a little bit more about that. Let's talk about the military aspect. When you say that, I think what you're trying to say, and I would love for you to expound on this, is that when the military used the software to do their voting from overseas, at that point, the software can then access their devices. Is that correct?
Yeah, the tenet to keep in mind is that a computer network is only as strong as its weakest link. So if you've already essentially let the Trojan horse in the walls of the city of Troy by giving them access to peripherals and computers that are hosting this Polchi software or this Konak software used for Uocava voting, and you've got other systems on those same devices, well, now they're compromised as well. And that's why this is so concerning. Nobody's done any detailed analysis about the depth of this threat, but I can tell you that the prosecuting attorney covering this case, I think his last name is Nash, actually said that this is the largest data breach in American history. And so, and I think it's tying into the fact that it's not just the 1.8 million poll workers that are at risk.
Well, right. And let's talk about that. It's not just that, but we're talking, and this is all on your website for those who want to go and read about this, please do. It's letsfixstuff.org. But on your website, you say on here that some other information that could be accessed by the CCP are election results, mail-in ballot status, voter records, signatures, security data, and a lot of other things. Why would the CCP want to know someone's mail-in ballot status, Patrick?
Well, of course, that tells why would anybody intent on election fraud or modifying election results want to know that information? It's because if you know that information and you know it before the election's actually completed, which is why mail-in ballots are such a bad idea, because you can track the status of who's voted and when they voted with that system. If you know that, then you also can use that information against your projections for the election and determine how many additional ballots you may need to stuff at drop boxes like we saw in 2000 Mules. So this is very concerning. That is, and that's also why early voting is a bad idea. You don't want to let people know who's voted, who hasn't voted yet. You want the results to be unhampered by that information. And they like to get this information early so that they can manipulate the votes. And one key thing I wanted to highlight that ties into the issue with this Polchi software being deployed in particular in LA County, which is one of the things I feature in the letsfixstuff.org article that you're referring to, is that this system was actually, their Polchi software was implemented at the state level in the state of California. It wasn't yet implemented in LA County, but it was implemented at the state level, which indicates that software was connected. If you look at the diagram, it was connected directly into the voter rolls and into the election results databases. And once you have all that information, you can control the outcome of an election digitally.
Talking about Democrats wanting to codify things in law that are completely illegal is Proposal 2.
Yeah.
That Michiganders are going to need to vote on next week. Let's talk about Proposal 2. Why is it a bad idea? Again, we've talked about this before on my show, but it's been a little while. And I want to remind everybody, this is the Promote the Vote initiative that you're hearing about. A lot of propaganda and shininess about this, but let's talk about the reality of what that would do.
Well, first of all, everybody needs to understand it's a constitutional amendment. So whatever its provisions are, they are going to supersede any provisions of law. And that's by design, because Michigan put together a petition drive for called Secure My Vote that would require, among other things, photo ID, and would also require the prohibition of drop boxes and outside or private funding of different election practices, essentially letting private enterprises take over our public elections. So this is designed to actually nullify that provisions of that petition drive. Furthermore, it addresses something we were just talking about, which was early voting and the ability, it actually guarantees in our constitution the ability to provide 9 days of early voting. Every day you give somebody the early results of the election, you enable them to go off and figure out how many ballots they need to stuff in an illegal manner in order to make it so that they can't be detected. And that's why early voting is a horrible idea. We should just have one day, no mail-in voting, just get out there, make it a holiday. We got holidays for pretty much everything else out there. Let's make the preservation of our republic worth having its own national holiday. And there's other provisions in there that would make it essentially put in the Constitution that you can have drop boxes, put in the Constitution that you can have private funding like Zuckbucks manipulating the results of our elections. So it's all the things that they used in 2020 to manipulate our election and steal our election. What they're doing is putting all those provisions into our Constitution.
Right.
So it's bad news. So it's in Michigan, it's pretty easy. We vote no on all the ballot proposals that are out there.
Yeah, and I want to make something clear, too, regarding Jocelyn Benson, so that we just clear the space and there's no confusion. A lot of people received absentee ballots without even requesting them. Yeah. And that is illegal. She's been in violation of election laws time and time again. In fact, Patrick, I think we counted it up to 5 total.
Yeah. She's been cited for by 5 different courts for violations of Michigan law.
Right. And one of those being sending out automatically these absentee ballots, that's one of the things that would be codified into law if Proposal 2 passed. So everyone needs to vote no on all the proposals in Michigan.
Well, I want to clarify that in one position, because she went to the Court of Appeals. Court of Appeals, there was a 2-1 decision, and she was actually granted the authority under that Court of Appeals decision to issue absentee ballot applications out to people. Now, you're correct, and the dissenting opinion in that court opinion said that the only people authorized to send out ballots to absentee voters are the local clerks. It's an example of a bad ruling, but that's what the Court of Appeals did rule in that case.
Okay, thank you for the clarification. Appreciate that. What do you expect is going to happen in Michigan next week? I know, already people are voting, early voting, correct? There's some absentee ballots and things like that going on.
Yeah, we don't have pure early voting here, but you have something called absentee voting. And a lot of municipalities like Detroit and even my own township of Canton Township, just outside of Detroit, has implemented what they call satellite voting centers that allow people that want to cast an absentee ballot a place to go off and get their ballot, fill it out, and turn it in. And so that has been going on for pretty much the last 2 or 3 weeks already here in the state of Michigan. So the election is very much underway.
Right. And we want to remind everybody that you need to go and vote on election day. Even if you have to work that day, you just show up and get in line, because they can't turn you away once you're in line. And what are some ways we can try to combat, some practical ways that people can try to combat the potential steal that we think is going to happen through these mail-in ballots and absentee ballots? Are there some practical ways we can combat it by just kind of maybe showing up later to the elections, to the polls, or do you have any advice on that?
Well, I think your key suggestion of voting on election day is great. And if you can't do it on election day for whatever reason, then turn it in the night before. The less time we give them up front to go off and figure out how many votes they need to steal, the better it works out for us. There's a whole, list of things that people can do. If you go to mi.foramericafirst.com, there's a little tab up there saying take action. There's things that you can do. So if you want to participate in the oversight of the elections, there's schedules on you know, overseeing what's happening at drop boxes, where we can have observers actually making sure that the same chicanery that we saw in the documentary 2000 Mules is discouraged. There's also things we can do to serve as a poll challenger and make sure that they are following election law. And we just had a great ruling, one of those rulings against Jocelyn Benson, where she was trying to constrain the ability of poll challengers to actually ensure election integrity. She was essentially tying their hands, and the judge smacked her down, saying she was violating the law with her guidelines. And so now, for the first time in a long time, we have an official court ruling that allows poll challengers to document examples of election fraud with their cell phones, their smartphones. And, you know, where this would have come in real handy is in the wake of the 2020 election, when I was serving as a poll challenger at TCS Center, and they had that delivery truck pull up to the back at 3:30 in the morning.
Yes, I
couldn't
saw that
use
video.
I couldn't use my cell phone. We had to wait for a FOIA request to be responded to by the city of Detroit to give us that surveillance video. And that's what Gateway Pundit pulled out. Mm-hmm. And literally, but all the rest of the document, we had plenty of affidavits to that event happening, but nobody believed us because they treated it as hearsay evidence because we didn't have the video. Now that's reconciled thanks to Judge Brock Swartzel's ruling.
That's incredible. And I do think too, it's really important to tell everybody, even though the Republican-led legislature in Michigan was not able to really make headway with Governor Whitmer vetoing so many things, you guys have done a lot of practical things to try to secure Michigan's elections. Can you name off just a couple? I know you just mentioned that specifically, but what are some other things that have been done so far?
Well, where the legislature has let us down, and I'm a former Michigan State Senator, so I know what they could be doing. I know what they did. And it was frustrating, but it's been the people. I call them the meddling kids that have been engaged with various activities. So people have been analyzing the our statewide voter registration file for ineligible voters. We've been doing filing lawsuits like the one we just won against Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson. And we've been organizing people as poll challengers and training them as poll challengers. So it's really been a bottoms up approach to securing our elections. Essentially, if we want to secure our elections, it's up to the people to wake up, get engaged, and get active.
Patrick, thank you so much for joining me today. God bless you for all the amazing work that you and your team is doing. I really appreciate all of your hard work. And again, tell everybody where they can get more truth. It's your website. And is there anywhere else? Are you on social media?
Oh, yeah. Believe it or not, I'm still on Twitter and I'm still on Facebook. I call Twitter my progressive focus group. So you learn to refine your arguments before folks that aren't very friendly. But also, I think it's important, too, if you want to understand what to look for as a poll challenger, you got to understand how they stole it in 2020. And that's why I put together the book, The 2020 Coup. So if you go to the2020coup.com, you can find out how to get a hold of that, because it not only talks about what happened, but it talks about what we can do, to your point of how can citizens get involved, how can legislators get involved, how can law enforcement get involved, and it provides a nice little prescription for all of them.
Sounds great, Patrick. Thanks again for joining us today. Would love to have you back on again soon.
Sounds great, April. Not gonna lie.
Thanks so much for joining me for another edition of Face the Facts. Please share this episode and help this show grow right here on Real America's Voice. Make sure you like today's episode and please subscribe to the Rumble channel as well. We're so glad you're here. Until next time, God bless.